Good afternoon and welcome to Union Solidarity with Chile, 50 years since the coup. My name is Karina.
And my name is Pilar.
Today we'll be commemorating the 50th anniversary year since the bombing of the presidential palace in Chile on September 11, 1973, which began the coup by military general Augusto Pinochet, who was directly backed by the CIA, and marked the beginning of 17 years of brutal military repression under his dictatorship. And we'll be discussing with three guests today their experience in solidarity campaigns from Australia, starting from the early 70s. Now, before we kick off, Pilar, should we give listeners a bit of a background on what happened in Chile those 50 years ago?
Yeah, as early as 1970, Chile had the first Marxist government that had been democratically elected. And so that presented a real threat to the US and US interests, particularly in relation to copper mines and the financial interests that the US had. And just as early as 1970, the White House created this group called the Committee of 40, headed by the National Security Council director, Henry Kissinger, who some of you might know. And what they did was started to fund a destabilization campaign. So at that point in March 1970, so 3 years before the actual coup took place, they started to approve funding for a spoiling operation against the Allende government's Popular Unity Coalition. And at the time, what those interests that were threatened represented were things like free education, increased housing, a fair pension, you know, all the things that we would like to strive for in our society, but within a neoliberal model, become harder and harder to achieve.
Yeah, if you look at the first 40 measures of Allende's Popular Unity government, they included things like no more taxes on food, you know, no more unemployment, an end to class injustice, real programs, literacy programs, free nurse training for poor nannies.
One curious one was about guaranteeing a daily ration of half a litre of milk to all Chilean children. And in my family, I benefited from that because I was born in 71. And I heard this great anecdote from the minister. So Allende would gather all his ministers at the time, and he appointed the education minister and said, "I've got this great idea. I want half a litre of milk to go to all Chilean children, and you're in charge of implementing that." And I met that minister in Cuba at a conference, and he was saying how nervous he was. He's like, "Oh shit, like, please don't let it be me. Please don't let it be me." And he gets pointed out.
Every child.
And so he has to implement it. And the way they did that was through the schools and kindergartens. So, yeah. Curiously, that continued throughout the dictatorship.
Really?
Strangely enough.
Well, that also does remind me that part of that destabilization ahead of the coup also included hoarding food to make it look as if there was no food in the country. So spreading a false sense of discontent when actually all of these programs being implemented were bringing everything up to speed, and that was proven.
Yeah, it was literally the day after the coup, so September 12. The shelves, you know, the day before had been bare in supermarkets, and there was like this food crisis and food shortage,
quote unquote.
Yeah, and the next day, the shelves were all full. Basically, it was class struggle. So all these things that were threatened resulted in the US-backed coup that bombed the presidential palace on the morning of September 11 in the death of President Allende. He gave a very impassioned last speech that was broadcast through a radio called Radio Magallanes, and those words are famous. He spoke about the dark time that the people were living, but basically gave a message of hope. This year marks the 50th anniversary of that coup in Chile, where thousands were killed, displaced, exiled and disappeared.
And tortured.
Yeah, yeah. It was a very violent, it was one of the most violent dictatorships in Latin America at the time. There was also the Argentinian one that came a couple of years later.
And yet the US still purports it is a great success story because they had sent economists over. We were the original neoliberal project, right? They had privatized everything, and because economically the wealthier had become more wealthy, that's the economic measure of success at the cost of tens of thousands of lives, some of which disappeared, tortured, still with unknown whereabouts today, right? My grandfather was a union delegate, and one day he went to work and there was someone pointing out union members on the back of a military truck, and they were getting thrown in never to be seen again, right? And this is a common story amongst Chileans, not only in Australia but around the world.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, the dictatorship and the repression happened very swiftly and quickly. And at first, the different organisations, like, for example, the Communist Party were first targeted, then the MIR, which was the Movement of the Revolutionary Left.
So that was the armed resistance group. And then all the way, yeah, so on and so on, down to academics, poets, artists.
And pretty much everyone. And that repression was quite brutal. And you mentioned the neoliberal project that they had economists headed by Milton Friedman. Mm. And the group was called the Chicago Boys because they came from the Chicago School of Economics. And they set about to create a neoliberal project. But the only way that they could implement this project was through violent repression. The only way that they could make this was by doing things like abolishing elections, making strikes and unions illegal, imposing a strict censorship of books, changing the school curriculum, etc., etc. And that meant creating a secret police force that could enforce these brutal measures. And so a lot of the people who supported the coup would often argue that, oh, but the Pinochet government fixed this and did that, and but at what cost? That neoliberal project that began in Chile has now been modelled around the world. Mm. And we see the effects of that in Australia because we're living and breathing those things when things get privatised. And that dream that the Allende government had for making Chile a better place to live for everybody was crushed on that September 11. And September 11 for Chileans is a day of mourning, mm. is a day of remembrance. And this year will be a huge commemoration because it is 50 years. And as you mentioned earlier, some of the people who were disappeared during that time, those families still have not received any information about the whereabouts of their loved ones. And so it's a very moving time. What we want to talk about on today's program is about the solidarity that existed between the recently arrived migrants, refugees, exiles from Chile into Australia, and how that began a worldwide movement of solidarity, how important that was to put pressure on the dictatorship through the use of boycotts and denouncing what was happening, the human rights violations, but also getting out information, because the story that the dictatorship was saying was, you know, everything's fine, you know, nothing to see here.
So our first guest today is Ricardo Fredes, speaking to us from South Australia. He's a longtime activist in Chilean solidarity, and he's also been volunteering as a CFS firefighter in South Australia for over 20 years.
Thanks for joining us today, Ricardo.
Thanks to you for inviting me.
I wanted to talk about the history of the struggle of solidarity with Chile in Australia and make that connection. Can we start by you telling us a little bit about how your family came to Australia and also the solidarity campaigns that you were involved in when you arrived?
Actually, during the coup in Chile, my father was arrested and taken to a concentration camp, Isagua, to be more exact. And he was there for a while. And also my older brother was taken and tortured and then brought home. And because we were kicked out of our house, we were moving from place to place in different parts of Chile. After a while, my parents had to leave the country, and the only way they could do it is that two of them, helped by the Catholic Church, went across the Andes to Argentina. Me and my brothers, we are five brothers, stayed in different parts of Chile on our own or with other families, until Mom and Dad managed to organize through the United Nations our exit of Chile. So we went to Argentina and we stayed there for about 7 months. And it was a very terrible time. It was becoming more and more dangerous for Chileans to be there because of all the fascist forces that were there ready to initiate a coup. And my father was arrested twice while we were there, so there was no chance that we were going to stay there. We applied to different countries, and we said that wherever they accepted us first, we were going to go, and the first one was Australia. So we came to Australia. We were sent directly to Melbourne. And that's how, we started our life in here. And as soon as we arrived, we got together with other Chileans and started sort of the solidarity movement in Melbourne. And unions were pivotal in that support because, they already, when I arrived, already there were some people that went, to Chile to visit during, to get information from the trade unionists in Chile. We knew about that. And they were very helpful with the Chilean solidarity at that time.
Are you referring to a group of unionists that travelled to Chile in 1974,
75? Yes, that happened well before we arrived in Australia. And we've heard of these people that did go. I'm not sure if there were any from Victoria, but I heard a lot about the ones that went from Sydney.
Yes, I believe Brian McMahon was a rep from Victoria. He was part of the AMWU at the time. Now, Ricardo, going back to the solidarity movement, 3CR was also key in supporting that solidarity movement as the first wave of Chileans had come in 74, 75, and 3CR started broadcasting in 76. Now, you were broadcasting out of the Cromwell Street studios. Can you tell us a little bit about that as well?
Yeah, there was a lot of solidarity with Chile, right from the start, because that was a big thing in international politics, because it was during the Cold War and a democratically elected government was overthrown with the help of the United States. So after the Vietnam War, there were a lot of people who were very interested in what was going on in Chile during, the government of Allende. And then they saw how the coup came and destroyed the hopes of many people who have, they thought that it was going to be the first time that a socialist government was going to be in power by election, which is, the peaceful road that they call, to socialism that was started in Chile. So there was a lot of support from Australians, and many of those people that were supporting. I still remember Cromwell Street, and then I remember when it moved, from there. I remember clearly being in Cromwell Street, sitting in these wooden stools. We used to prepare the program listening to Radio Havana and also Radio Prague and Radio Berlin to be able to get all the up-to-date news. I remember spending hours and hours trying to get that information, put it in paper, and then, broadcast it. So it was quite a labor-intensive. It's not like now that there is internet and all that. But 3CR was the radio to get news and also the support you know, to the Chilean solidarity movement.
Yes, I remember as a child, my family in 76, 77, 78, sitting around the kitchen table and listening to Chile Lucha program on a Friday night. And that was a way of staying informed about what was happening. As you said, it was one of the only ways we were getting information because the information wasn't reaching us via any other mainstream source.
Yeah. So it was hard work, but very important part of the solidarity movement.
And Ricardo, can you talk about the way that the solidarity movement worked? I know that it was lots of union involvement, lots of Chileans who had been exiled or refugees. Can you talk about some of the campaigns you were involved in?
Yeah, so some of the things that people may not be aware of, that things that we were doing. For example, in the early days, we used to do a bulletin of news for Chile. So we used to get support from different people, you know, parliamentarians, some unions used to provide, you know, some help, you know, to send, you know, these bulletins. Because in Chile, there was no information about what the resistance movement was doing. We were sending information back to Chile, you know, and I remember having obtained a telephone book from different parts of Chile, and we used to randomly get addresses of people and send them the bulletin from here, from Australia. There were hundreds and hundreds of addresses, and we used to put a note in there that where did we get, you know, their address, saying that it was random. So if they get picked up by the armed forces, you know, people weren't going to get into trouble. But it was something that we did at the start. The other campaign that we did was the hunger strike. During the dictatorship, the unions, you know, the ICTU had sanctions. They, you know, they wouldn't receive anything coming from Chile in the ports or airports or anything like that. And it continued until the 80s. And then for some unknown reason, I can't remember, they were going to lift the sanctions. And we decided that the dictatorship was still there, so the sanctions should continue. There were about five people in Melbourne and some others in other states, in Canberra and in Sydney. There were communists, you know, doing the same thing. They started a hunger strike when it was decided that they're going to lift the sanctions against Chile. And this was still during the dictatorship. We started at the outside the post office in Bourke Street in Melbourne. Then the police arrived and kicked us out of there. We went to a church in Richmond. Can't remember the name of the church.
I think it's the one on the corner of Hoddle Street and Victoria Parade, just up the road.
Yeah, that one. And because it was so out of sight, we decided to go. You know, we had some meetings with people in the church, and we decided to do it in the grounds of the cathedral in Swanson Street, which was pretty good because there was a lot of people that came through there and got the information about what was going on. We managed to get support from unions and from AFP, you know, to try to stop that in Chile and the solidarity. And one of the things we managed to achieve on that is we were asked to go to Canberra to talk to the politicians, and we managed to get an agreement that the sanctions weren't going to be lifted then, you know. It was stopped. Eventually they were lifted, but years after. There were so many campaigns of, you know, solidarity to get financing in support of the political prisoners. We used to get some of their handcraft and used to sell them here in Australia because they were in a really bad situation. Also, our organization was supporting the clandestine radio station, Radio Liberacion. Yeah, those are some of the things I can remember.
Wow, what an important part of history that you were part of.
Yeah, it was intense sometimes.
Well, yes, especially because your family had been directly affected. So I imagine that the solidarity work was not just symbolic, but politically important, personally important too.
Yeah, and still is, because, you know, there is a need, you know, for solidarity with Latin America too.
Thank you so much, Ricardo. I really appreciate your time today. And yes, keep on fighting the good fight.
Thank you, Glenn.
We'll now hear from Elizabeth Rivera, based in Sydney, longtime Chilean activist and unionist and founding member of the National Campaign for Truth and Justice in Chile. Can you tell us when you came to Australia and the activism that you were involved in from that time?
I came to Australia in 1977, and since then, obviously, I've been part of the union movement in Australia, especially because of the support that we have, the Chilean community here, from the union movement, Australian union movement, since the time of the dictatorship in Chile.
Can you tell us a little bit about some of the major campaigns that you were involved in the solidarity movement during the dictatorship?
Well, during the dictatorship, and when we arrived here, obviously with the community was a lot closer because we all arrived nearly at the same time. We all met with each other, but we had the support of the union movement here in Australia, and we were all very much part of that that group as well, of that community group, if you want to call it, in those days. I remember that we got together in those days for meetings, very big meetings with a lot of people in Sydney, with the CSMEU, with the NUA, and obviously other unions as well, but the mine unions that actually got together to give that support was NUA and CSMEU. I've been part of CSMEU membership for a very long time. Then I became member because I was in the administration area of other unions as well because of my work, but I've always been a union member.
The solidarity movement with Chile was probably one of the biggest here in Australia. Can you tell us some of the sentiment, the feelings of working in such large movement?
I tell you what, going back in time, I could tell you that in those days, obviously my English wasn't as good as it is now. In many of my comrades, they obviously we didn't speak English, but the members of the union that came to those meetings and other Australian people that came to those meetings, they were very understanding of what happened to us and how they could help us. And one of the ways that they helped us a lot was to create that special feeling about us being part of Australia, being part of the union movement. And in doing that, our sense of friendship and our sense of community unity was incredible. So it was a really, really mix of feelings, if you can call it that way, in those days, because of the way that we feel very welcome into these meetings when we didn't even speak the language in many cases, or we made a lot of mistakes on what we tried to say. But the Congress was very good, and they always have someone there that could speak English and Spanish, and so they helped us with the language in those days. So the feeling that we had there was of a big friendship and a big comrade union of people. Didn't matter where they come from. And when we're talking about solidarity on those days, I could tell you that the groups that they were together and they were helping the union were people from other countries as well, that they have all different situations. So we have people in there that they speak Arabic, coming from different countries, other people that came from England, that they knew about what was happening. There were people from everywhere, so their sense of community was really, really big.
Thank you, Elizabeth. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Moving to former State Secretary of the MUA and longtime union activist, Comrade Kevin Bracken.
The Seamen's Union and the Waterside Workers Federation took part in the longest boycott in Australian history after Allende was assassinated and Pinochet took over in Chile. The Committee of Management, in September 1973, after they heard about what had happened there, they passed a resolution condemning the military takeover of Brackett's legitimate elected Allende government and resolved to participate in any action of protest to arouse public opinion, reject any diplomatic recognition and speed the restoration of trade union and civil liberties to the Chilean people. So they imposed a boycott on trade with Chile, and that was not lifted until the end of the Pinochet regime in 1989, and it became the longest boycott in Australia's history. Then the Whitlam government, which 1 month after the coup, recognised the Pinochet regime. And there was, I think, 57 ALP members of parliament also opposed it. The ACT opposed it. The World Federation of Trade Union opposed it as well. And first off, the Seamen's Union said we need to send a delegation over there to see how it's going. And later on, the Chilean airline, LAN, said, oh, we'll fly you over there for free. And the Seamen's Union rethought their position. They said there's a big difference in going over there and having a proper investigation and another thing with being, you know, taken over, because what they've done is got rid of the legitimate trade union people from LAN and they had their puppets in there. So there was a six trade unions met in early 1974 about whether they should send a boycott over there. And they said, all right, if we're going to have it, we want to go and we want a free interview with the prisoners without surveillance. We don't want any victimisation of people visited. We want free movement, safe conduct, etc. And after that, the Chilean Foreign Minister withdrew their invitation to investigate it. Early in 1974, their boycott came to the test because what had happened, the Allende government had ordered two ships with wheat and they arrived in Fremantle to be loaded. The Seamen's Union refused to man the tugs to bring the ships in. Later on, the ACTU intervened and said, you know, it had been ordered by the legitimate government and it should be honoured by the Australian Wheat Board. So the tugs brought the ships in and then the waterside workers refused to load it. So with a lot of discussions between the Australian Wheat Board, they said, all right, because it was these agreements were entered into by the legitimate government, we'll load them. But that was the last wheat sent to Chile until 1995, 96. The odd part was too, the Allende government had increased the value of imports from Australia by 8 times of the previous government before them because of its policy of not of trading without asking the monopolists. The big American agro businesses had been stitching Chile up and the Allende government had ordered like 8 times more wheat than what the previous government had. So it was good for Australia too. In 1977, the ACTU lifted its ban and they recommended the Seamen's Union and Waterside Workers lift their ban and they refused to do that. B.V. Elliott, who was the Secretary of the Seamen's Union at the time, wrote in the Seamen's Journal in 1975, "Seamen will oppose oppression and fascism wherever it appears and will take whatever action is in their power to bring about its downfall. For fascism is a degradation of mankind. It is a rule of violence, suppression and war." So, yeah, we're very proud of the stand that the unions were the forerunners of the MUA, the Seamen's Union and the Waterside Workers Federation took against the Pinochet regime when it overthrew the duly elected government of Salvador Allende. And I suppose, too, we can have a look at who the American ambassador was, Marshall Green, the coup master. He was in Korea when the military took over there. He was in Indonesia. He was the ambassador for Indonesia when Sukarno was thrown out and Suharto was put in place by the CIA. He went to Chile where Allende was thrown out and Pinochet took over. And then he came to Australia and next year Gough Whitlam in 1975 was thrown out by the Governor-General. This relationship too with Australia and Chile. We had people come out from Chile Joan Jara, Victor Jara's wife, came out and she wrote a message to the Seamen's Union, the Seamen's Journal. We know of all working people, seamen have overall a greater contact and therefore appreciation of the world and its people, and possibly understand better than many others how international solidarity helps in the struggle of the people all over the world. We know of the fighting struggle of Australian seamen to help people of the oppressed countries, and particularly the fight against fascism. You've already taken action. Your attitude and protest, imposing a ban on trade with Chile, including refusal of tugs, this positive action, this is what is needed. Your actions are a great inspiration and encouragement in our struggle. A lot of people came out as refugees from Chile. They recognised we work with people from on the waterfront whose families had come out as refugees at the time. There was a lot of Chilean people in Australia that came out after the Pinochet regime had taken over. So, yeah, there was a lot of camaraderie between people who'd come from Chile, and they were more likely to be progressive people because they could see what had happened when fascism takes over a country. So, yeah, it's the longest boycott in Australian history. The Seamen's Union also started the oil boycott of South Africa. SUA was the first one to impose the oil boycott, and Nelson Mandela recognised it as the biggest thing in the apartheid in South Africa. So it's been a very progressive union, and so we just hope it keeps going. But, of course, all the things that limit trade unions from taking the actions which you used to take, you know, firstly banning of any boycott, you can't do a secondary boycott now in Australia. You're going to get sued. Has had a chilling effect on the solidarity actions that people can take. It's the world's become a harder place to operate in. Every legitimate union has had their working space confined more and more by each regressive bit of legislation that gets passed by governments, and you've got a smaller and smaller ground to operate on. Yeah. And that's unfortunately been an outcome of the neoliberal policies that have happened that really limit the amount of actions that working people can take through their unions.
And stay tuned to 3CR for the rest of the day. Happy May Day.